Chapter 9. The Most Confidential Knowledge. My dear Arjun, I'll reveal a secret about myself. This secret is difficult to understand, but I can reveal it to you because you won't find fault with me when I do. By understanding this knowledge, you will become free from the miseries of this material world. This knowledge is the king of all knowledge. As bhakti is king, this knowledge is also king. It is the topmost secret because bhakti is secret. It purifies one's existence so much that one need not perform any other process. And because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. You have glorified this knowledge of bhakti, Krishna, saying that it is wonderful and joyful to perform. But then, why aren't people accepting it? Because they do not have faith, Arjun. They have no faith in bhakti, despite the fact that bhakti has been glorified. They think that these words are false eulogy. Therefore, they must take birth again within this material world. But now hear this Aishwarya Gyan, knowledge of my opulences, which is needed for Dasya Bhakti. Hearing this confidential knowledge will increase your faith and devotion. I pervade this entire universe in my unmanifested form. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. I don't associate with the material nature, therefore I am independent of it and the living beings. But they are not independent of me, and yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Oh, you've contradicted yourself, Krishna. How is that? Ah, that is my expertise, Arjun. Behold my mystic opulence, which is impossible for others to understand. Although I am the maintainer of all living beings, and although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic world, for myself is the very source of creation. Therefore, I am all-pervading and aloof. It is something like considering Rahu's head. It's not different from Rahu, but at the same time, it is different. Or try to understand this example. The wind blows everywhere, and yet it always rests in the sky. But because of its detachment from the sky, you can say that it is not in the sky. In the same way, because I am aloof, the living beings are not in me, as the wind is not in the sky. Krishna, you have told me to behold your mystic opulences, and yet you give me an example by which I can understand them. How are they mystical if I can understand them? But the example I gave is not of sentient beings, Arjun. The sky is detached because it is inert, but both the living beings and I are conscious. Conscious beings become attached to their support, and the supporter becomes attached to his dependents. However, in my case, these statements are not applicable, and that is the inconceivable mystery. So all living beings are in you. That I understand now, Krishna. But what happens to them during the great dissolution of the universe? At the end of Brahma's life, all living entities enter my nature by my will. At the beginning of another millennium, I create again, and they come out to enjoy again. I am aloof, still, by my will, I do everything without touching the material nature. You are performing so many activities, yet you do not become bound like the living entities. How is that? I am not bound by my work because I have no attachment. Attachment is the cause of bondage, not the work itself. Although I perform activities of different types, I am not bound because I am neutral. How are you neutral, Krishna? It is my energy, Arjun, the material energy, which is producing all moving and non-moving beings. I am only supervising. I simply glance over that nature and it begins to act. Just as one catches fragrance by being near a flower garden, material nature works without my direct contact. Still, without me, nature can do nothing, as without a king, his ministers can do nothing. Krishna, you create and pervade in unlimited planets, and your form is full of knowledge and bliss. You are the source of Mahavishnu, and yet, as Krishna, some people despise you. What is the reason for this? These people do not know that my form is superior to even Mahavishnu. And not knowing this, they simply deride me. They do not understand that my existence is superior. Because I exhibit a human-like form, they think that I have acquired my qualities due to tapasya. Those who are ignorant speak in this way, although even Lord Brahma worships me. Krishna, what is the destination of those who think that your human-like form is illusory and therefore disrespect you? Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. They achieve an evil, lusty, and violent nature. They disrespect me and thus go to hell. Who are those who do respect you, Krishna? Only Mahatmas, Arjuna. They know my personality. They understand that I have many forms, but they enjoy that. Although they are humans, they are divine. They know that I'm superior to even Brahma and Shiva. Therefore, they develop deep faith and become fixed in me. How do they render service to you, Krishna? They always perform my kirtan and endeavor with full determination. They go to my temple and pay their obeisances, falling on the ground like a stick, not caring for the dust or mud, out of love for me. However, Arjuna, there are others who worship me, but with the help of Jnana Yajna. They are not Mahatmas. They think that they are the Lord and see no duality. Some worship the demigods as the Lord, and others worship the universal form as the Supreme. But it is I who am the ritual, the sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb. I am the mantra, the butter, the fire, and the offering. I am the father, the mother, and grandfather of this universe. I am the object of knowledge, the syllable Om, and the Rig, Sama, and Yajur Vedas. I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, the abode, the refuge, and the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place and the eternal seed. Hey Arjuna, I give heat, I withhold and send forth rain. I am immortality, I am also death personified. Both spirit and matter are in me. So it is I who am situated in the universe, yet still they do not worship me. Others who study the Vedas and drink the Soma juice pray to go to heaven and worship me indirectly. Purified of sinful reactions, they take birth on Indraloka, where they enjoy celestial delights for 10,000 years. After enjoying heavenly pleasures and having exhausted their pious credits, they return to this mortal planet again. Therefore, those who want to enjoy by following karma kanda achieve only repeated birth and death in this material world. But those who are my pure devotees do not try to enjoy happiness from their karma. Such learned souls who desire eternal association with me by meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. Although they do not desire anything from me, I still provide it. Even the burden of maintaining their body is carried by me as a householder takes care of his own family. What kind of devotees are they who let you carry their needs on your head, Krishna? They have not given me this burden, Arjuna. I take it by my own sweet will. I can create universes, so this is not a burden for me. Rather, I do it out of love for them. Just like a young man who loves a young girl carries his beloved lady on his shoulders, in the same way, I take pleasure from carrying the needs of my devotees. What about those who are worshiping the demigods, Krishna? They are also your worshippers. What about their benefits? Why don't they come to you? They think that the demigods are the ones granting them benedictions, Arjun. They are worshiping me, but their worship is improper. They neglect the path that brings them to me. They do not follow it, and thus they do not come to me. I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. All these forms which they worship are my forms, but because they think the demigods are supreme and do not know me, they do not attain me. Those in goodness who worship the demigods attain the demigods. Those in passion who worship the forefathers go to the forefathers. Those in ignorance who worship ghosts go to the planets of the ghosts. But my worshippers are nirgun, above the modes, and they certainly come to me. Those people who worship the demigods think, Indra is my Lord. He is the supreme object of worship. But my devotees think, Krishna is manifested in so many demigods. He is the actual supplier, the supreme Lord, and therefore he should be worshipped. Even though both may perform some activities, the worshippers of the demigods have a different consciousness, and they go to a different place and again fall down. But my devotees know that I am unlimited and that I am the supreme controller. Therefore, they come to me, remain in me, and never fall down. To worship these other demigods, one must endeavor so much. But if one just offers me, with love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. One can offer me things that are easily available, but they must be offered with love. I eat that which is offered with love. Although I have no desires and I am not hungry, devotion is the appetizer that creates my appetite. A devotee's mood of love makes me eat. A pure heart with no other desires, that is bhakti. My dear Krishna, you've explained many types of activities and different types of devotees, but what is my qualification? Arjun, at present you are unable to give up karma completely, and thus you do not have the qualification for pure devotion. Still, you are not so attached that you have to perform sakam karma. Rather, you should perform nishkam karma. So, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, or whatever activities you perform, do that as an offering to me. That is nishkam karma. What is the difference between that and pure devotion, Krishna? My pure devotees have already offered their very lives to me. So there is no offering of the fruits of activities, because they think that they and all their activities are already offered. The other devotees perform activities and then offer them to me. So there is still some false ego. But do not worry, Arjun. You just offer your activities to me. And if you act like this, it will be a good example for others, and I'll bless you. In this way, you'll be freed from karma and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you'll get special liberation and come to me. You deliver only your devotees and bring them to you, Krishna, not the non-devotees. Does this mean that you also have attachment and aversion? No, Arjun, I'm not partial, but my devotees are in me and I am in them. Actually, I am in everything and everything is in me. My devotees are attached to me, but others have no dealings with me. Practically speaking, for them I do not exist. Actually, there are so many living entities and I maintain everyone. Therefore, I am equal like rain. But some trees watered by the rain give sweet fruit, and others give bitter fruit. That is not a defect of the rain, Arjun. It is their nature. It is not my attachment and aversion. I am rewarding equally, but my devotee gets special treatment. So much so that even if he commits the most abominable action, if he's still determined to serve me, I do not reject him. Rather, he is still to be considered saintly. Yes, Krishna, I accept that he's a sadhu when he's worshipping you, but if he's doing nonsense, then he's not a sadhu. No, Arjun, in every regard he's a sadhu, because he's properly resolved to serve me. He's thinking that I am unable to give up this sinful activity, and I'll probably go to hell, but I'll never give up devotional service to Krishna. Therefore, I consider him a sadhu, Arjun. But how do you accept the service of such an irreligious man whose heart is polluted by lust, anger, and greed? Aren't his offerings contaminated by these things? He very quickly becomes righteous, and I accept him because he laments, remembering me again and again. And because of lamentation, his heart burns, and he thinks, "Alas, alas, there is no other devotee lower than me. I'm a black spot for devotees." Again and again, he curses himself and becomes purified due to this repentance. Or you can take it in this way, Arjun. Such a person, even when committing sins, his righteousness existed in him in a subtle form. He's taking the medicine of devotion, although the fever remains. He is not afraid, for he knows that the fever of improper activities will go away by the power of devotion. The sinful acts are like snakes with the fangs removed. Thus, he obtains eternal peace, for his lust will go away and never return. I understand that you are saying that he will become righteous, Krishna. There is no dispute. But if he remains sinful and does abominable activities, do we still consider him a sadhu during his life? My devotee never perishes, Arjun. Even if he dies, he does not become degraded. Many people will not agree, Krishna. How can I help them to understand? Take mridangas, Arjun. Take kartals and drums and bang everything loudly. Go wherever they are speaking like this and raise both hands in the air and make a vow. Take an oath in my name and say this: "The devotee, the Lord's devotee, even if improperly behaving, shall never perish." What will happen, Krishna? When you speak like this, Arjun, all the people will fall at your feet out of love and say, "Oh, Arjun, you are my guru." But why are you asking me to take this vow, Krishna? Why are you yourself not taking it? I like my devotees very much, Arjun, and I cannot tolerate any problems put upon them. I always protect my devotees. On this battlefield, I'll have to break my own vow when you are fighting with Bhishma. People will only know this Bhagavad Gita after the battle, and they'll say, "Oh, he spoke so many words, but he broke them all." However, they'll know that your words are like lines on a stone. Therefore, you should make this vow, Arjun. So go where people are doubting the potency of devotion and make this declaration boldly, that even those of sinful birth, who are naturally impious, if they get the association of my devotees and surrender, then I will give them shelter. They can attain the supreme destination. What to speak of Brahmins, devotees, and saintly kings? Therefore, Arjun, even though you have taken a temporary body in this world, you are a Raja Rishi, so render service to me. How should I do that, Krishna? Fix everything on me, Arjun. Do not just work with the body and let the mind go elsewhere. No, first fix your mind on me. Not like the servant of the king who renders service, but his mind is on his salary and his relatives. No, that is not the symptom of devotion. So much service may be done, but the mind is the key and the test. The mind must be fixed on the object of service. Therefore, fix your mind on me, and that thinking should be natural, like honey which flows from a bottle. Fix the mind like that, Arjun. Become my devotee and worship me, and then with love, offer your obeisances to me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me.